to another episode of Podcast on Fifth Ave. We're quickly approaching the end of the month of June, and there has still been no progress made in extending, re-signing Evgeny Malkin or Chris Letang. And people are starting to panic a little bit. I know that on Monday or Tuesday, beginning of the week, people on Twitter were really getting up in arms. And, you know, Penguins management is starting to sort of speak out on it. I know that there was stuff floating around out there about stuff that Ron Hextall said and Brian Burke spoke on Sportsnet. And it's definitely, regardless of speculation, exaggeration, people just being in their feelings, it isn't a positive sign that there is virtually no headway being made in signing one or both of these guys. It's just looking like, what are we doing? Is this going to happen? It might not happen. So what info do you have for us, Taylor, on where things stand with Malkin and Letang?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of information out there. Something like Hextall obviously does not like talking with the media. He doesn't like putting anything out there. Something he said on like Clean Out Day was like, I do not negotiate through the media, which means like anything is not, you know, being said about where things are. It's not coming from him. And he has an agreement with at least Letang, I assume Malkin, that like they won't put anything out there either. So it's really hard to get any information. But yeah, we're recording this Wednesday. Free agency opens in 2 weeks. So you'd think, you know, if it's going to get done, it's going to get done within these next 2 weeks. Because if they do actually make it to that period where they can start talking to other teams, I don't know how likely it is that they're going to be back. But I mean, so Brian Burke, he did talk on, I mean, you know, he used to work for Sportsnet, so he's close to, you know, the Sportsnet guys, and he went on, you know, their podcast, and he at least gave a little bit. He said that, you know, they do still want both players back. He said, you know, I want everyone to emphatically know that they are still talking with both Letang and Malkin, trying to get something done. Obviously, the issue is the term and cap space. I mean, the salary cap, it has to make sense. Both those areas, Penguins, they have what, 9 forwards, 6 defensemen, and 1 goalie under contract with, you know, around like $23 million in cap space, not a whole lot of wiggle room. I mean, so you figure they might make a trade to unload, to shed some salary, make it easier to find these guys. I did hear that, you know, front office is talking about Pettersson, which makes sense given like the depth at lefty. Pettersson makes $4 million. Pio Joseph, he's a restricted free agent, but he's someone who could come up and definitely be cheaper.
Yeah, for sure.
There are ways to free up cap space. Now, I mean, something I thought was interesting that Burke said was, you know, given where things are with the salary cap, it's kind of difficult to negotiate with both equally at the same time because you don't know. What needs to happen is one needs to sign, and then you know where things stand cap-wise, and then you sign the other. And so that's what they're doing, and Letang is the guy they're talking to more so first. So they're prioritizing Chris Letang. They are still talking with Malkin's agent, but Letang is the priority, which makes sense, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, like, the available options in free agency for both like right D and centers. The right-handed defenseman market, not great. It would be hard. I think it would be harder to replace Letang than it would be to replace Malkin. So that would be my guess is why they're prioritizing Chris.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. There are so many different things that they'd have to take into account, and again, it's not encouraging that there still hasn't been they haven't reached a deal, but it is at least good to know that they're prioritizing Letang, because I think that the general consensus even before was it seems like replacing Letang and what he brings to the table would just be way more difficult than replacing Malkin. And that's not to downplay Malkin and what he can do and what he's done for the team, but in general, Chris Letang's ability would just be hard to replicate. And that's a first pairing defenseman. Like, you're not going to just like pull another guy from within the lineup that the Penguins have right now and just place him on the first line and expect that to go swimmingly. And like you said, the market, not great. So hopefully they can reach some type of agreement with him. And then if possible, maybe do the same with Malkin, but the likelihood of them potentially signing neither of them is probably just as good, if not a little bit better, than them signing both or one of them. So what does that mean? If what do the Penguins have to do, or what do they have to be looking for in the free agent market to supplement that if they lose both of these guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, in either case, especially Letang, I think, you know, I know fans, they're salary cap space, you know, you can't afford to pay him whatever. I think Letang, if you look at what, you know, defensemen are getting, you can probably expect around like $9 million. So Letang probably due for a raise, just given what he brings. And so if you figure, you know, $9 million is what you're working with, I don't think you're going to, you know, if they do hit, you know, Letang doesn't come back and they hit free agency, I don't think you're going to get someone that's as good as Letang for even cheaper. You'd be probably paying just as much for someone that's not as good. So I still think Letang, if anyone, you know, they get something done with, but I mean, there are a couple of defensemen on the market. Right-handed. John Klingberg and Josh Manson seem to be the closest to, like, the ideal two. But, I mean, there a couple others. I mean, P.K. Subban, Colin Miller, Justin Schultz. Some of those would be cheaper than others. But, I mean, like, guys like a Klingberg or a Manson, you're going to be paying probably just as much for not, you know, Letang, you're probably still going to be able to get a bit of a hometown discount, just, you know.
Right.
Actually want to leave. I don't know. We've talked about, you know, like the Montreal thing before. Like, you know, a lot of people are saying like, oh, he might want to play for his hometown. And like his former agent is now the GM there. I think that's overblown. Montreal's not winning anytime soon. That's pretty clear. And a player doesn't always want to play for their hometown team. You know, it can be a bad thing in some cases. I mean, more distractions. You have like family or friends there. Can you get me tickets? That kind of stuff. And especially, I think playing in a Canadian market, a lot more pressure. And then also, even like, you know, step up from that, a French Canadian player playing in Montreal, a whole lot more pressure. So I don't know if I don't see what Letang would get out of it.
I don't know. I think that's all speculation. Again, like people were saying that about Brian Rust in Detroit. Right. Like, he may want to go there because hometown. And then he ended up signing here for less money than he probably would have made in Detroit. And maybe some guys do have this burning desire to play for the team that they grew up around. But I have a feeling more often than not, guys just want to be in a solid town where they have a really good chance to win and get paid fairly to do it. And Montreal, no, that's that they're not, the them being in the cup finals was a fluke. And it just doesn't seem like Letang would even have any desire to do that.
Yeah,
who knows?
I mean, like, you mentioned like Brian Rust. Everyone was like, oh yeah, Detroit definitely the front runner if he doesn't re-sign here, probably because, you know, Detroit obviously rebuilding team, they had a lot of cap space, so they definitely could have given Brian Rust more money. And I did ask like Brian Rust after he signed, like, did you ever seriously consider hitting free agency, you know, because he did definitely take less and he was like not even a thought to come back here. So I think a lot of people are trying to guess what are in these guys' heads, and no one knows. And so I mean, just to touch on like the centers who are available, because if Malkin goes, the second line center is not someone in house. Jeff Carter's not going to be your second line center, or Teddy Bluger. They have to add be a free agency. Nazem Kadri, I think, I mean, this is another situation where, like, what they would be paying Malkin, they might have to pay more to get one of these guys on
the yeah.
Kadri, definitely due to get paid. Vincent Trocheck, I know everyone wants him because he's from here.
Again, oh my god, the hometown stuff. Everybody just, like, cool it a little bit.
Ryan Strome, two centers who, there are two, like, good centers who are available that probably won't sign here. Patrice Bergeron, I feel like if he comes back at all, he's going to come back. It's going to be in Boston.
Yeah.
And then Claude Giroux, that would be real, really weird. I don't see Claude Giroux coming to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, the thought is, you know, if Malkin does hit free agency, a lot of people are talking about the Capitals. Because Nicholas Backstrom, the surgery he had isn't one that is really easy for NHL players to come back from. It hasn't really happened too often, and when it has, it's really been for it's a very long recovery, and they typically don't play for very long after. So
dang.
Backstrom might be done. That's why I think, like, people talking like Malkin to the Capitals. I don't see that happening either. I think that's.
Hopefully not.
I don't know. I mean, what, like Fleury, when the Capitals wanted to get him in a trade.
He said no.
It would be too weird. I don't know. I feel like, again, it's hard to get into Malkin's head or any of these guys' heads. But
yeah.
I don't know. If you had asked, I think both come back and they make the money work by trading Pettersson or something like that.
I hope you're right, because it would be weird to see either of them play somewhere else, and it would be... It seems like poor cap management to have to try to fit a similar caliber player under the cap by, you know, it just doesn't seem like it would make sense to get rid of them to pay somebody else as much, if not more. But I hope you're right. I feel like they both want to be here, and oh gosh, I guess we'll see. We have a couple weeks, so before free agency starts, so we can just hopefully ride it out and get some good news there. But why don't we take a quick break, and we will be right back. We're back, and we would be remiss if we didn't at least touch on the conclusion of this season with the Colorado Avalanche defeating the Tampa Bay Lightning in 6 games in Tampa Bay to win the Stanley Cup. And I feel like we both kind of basically predicted that, right? We were pretty spot on.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were betting on, you know, Tampa to three-peat. A big part of that is just the goaltending matchup, you know, Vasilevskiy versus Kemper. But, you and I were both on the same page, you know. Yeah, definitely Tampa wins the goaltending matchup, but the rest of Colorado just so strong. There's no way they lose this. And
yeah,
you're right.
we were right. Yeah. And Cale Makar won the Conn Smythe. Very, very well deserved. And it was just, with the exception of officiating being, you know, pretty dang spotty at times on both sides. Honestly, it was just bad overall. It was a really fun series to watch. It was the speed and the talent on that Avs team, and Tampa Bay just kind of hung in there until the very end when they, you know, kind of let it get away from them. But and that was what they had going for them besides Vasilevskiy, was how hard they fought to come back in each series, even if they were down. Like, they didn't really give up, and that made for a super entertaining series. But in the end, they were just outmatched tremendously. And it's always exciting when the most talented team wins the cup, and that definitely doesn't happen all the time. And Colorado deserved it and then some, because they're just so freaking good. And it ended up being a lot of fun. It was really good hockey, and I was, like, mildly disappointed it didn't go to 7 games, because it would have been great to have just one bonus game of hockey. But I also was glad that the Avs clinched it in Tampa, because yeah, it was just good to see them close it out, and I was rooting for them, and it was just so fun.
Yeah, I mean, Camel Carr, unreal. Unanimous voting for the Conn Smythe, too. That's just very rare. But, yeah, far and above the best player. I know, I think Nathan MacKinnon was almost unanimously the number two. He had a great series, too. I know a lot of people voted for, like, Vasilevskiy for, like, the third, in there because you get three picks.
Okay.
A lot of people did vote for Vasilevskiy, like, third. Which, I mean, he did have a great series, too, I think, other than, you know, the 7-0 game. But again, we talked about it at the time. Yeah. That wasn't on him, but it's, you know, hard to... A losing goalie can win the Conn Smythe. I mean, like, Ron Hextall did it when he was with the Flyers. But Vasilevskiy, when he lets in 7 goals, regardless of whose fault it was, you know, he's not going to
win
the Conn Smythe. But, yeah, he still had a great series. Did you see Kucherov the last, like, 30 seconds of the game? That was crazy. Yep. I mean,
that was wild.
For people who, like, didn't see, so he broke a stick. 30 seconds left, Tampa's down by 1. They're trying to tie it. Kucherov's on the ice. This is when there was the icing the non-icing. People thought it was going to be icing. So I don't know if everyone was...
It seemed like there was confusion.
Not everyone was playing like they thought play was going to continue. And I think that you know, goes with the equipment managers, too, because Kucherov broke a stick. He went over the – I mean, you watch, like – you know, you see it a lot with, like, the Penguins. You know, like, John Taglianetti, he's, like, the guy who stands by the sticks. And if a Penguins player breaks their sticks, it's, like, it's, like, the muscle memory. Like, you know where – that guy is on, like, the rack, and, like, he has it. I mean, like, when Crosby broke the stick, he grabbed it right away. Crosby, you know, got it from the bench and scored two seasons ago.
I think they were wearing the reverse retro jerseys, so it would have been 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's how I remembered. Yeah, it happened in the white jerseys. But Kucherov, he broke a stick. He gets to the bench. The icing wasn't called, so play continues, and he's trying to get the stick. The equipment guy didn't have it ready. You see him getting frustrated, and he takes off his gloves and throw them at the equipment guy, essentially taking himself out of the game, because not only does he not have a stick, he doesn't have gloves
either. No, he doesn't have gloves.
He can't go back there, even if... I mean, if he had just waited, like, a second or two, the equipment guy would have had the... But by then, he's so far out of the play, so... I don't know. You do kind of feel bad for, like, the equipment guy, too, because... There was some confusion with, like, the icing, but seeing Kucherov react that way, you're seeing, like, a lot of the Tampa guys become, like, the villains, you know? Crazy.
Yeah, because there were some – didn't Steven Stamkos do something? Was it game 6? I feel like there was something that was going around on Twitter that he, like
– It was the game 5, because what game was it when Colorado won in overtime? But no one saw.
Yeah, game 5.
I think this is what you're talking about. Four.
Yeah.
Game of force.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Colorado scored in overtime, but a lot of people didn't see the puck go in. But it was like wedged up top of in like the corner of the net, and he like tried to take it out of the net and like hide it. So like people didn't. But I mean, like everyone obviously. Ended up seeing the puck go in, you know.
Yeah.
He tried to hide it.
Oh, my goodness.
Honestly, first of all, I love, so back when this used to be on NBC, you'd get, like, 5 minutes into the celebration, and, like, you'd have to change your channel. They'd send it over to the NHL Network. NBC could not be bothered to show too much of the celebration.
Yeah.
ESPN did do a good job. They stayed with it for, like, an hour. And there was,
There's that, at least, yeah.
But, like, my favorite part of, like, the sub... First of all, they dented it right away.
Like, oh, my God. My heart stopped when I saw that.
Yeah, Abe Kubel, who just the show, one of the... Because he came from the Flyers. Don't let the Flyers anywhere near the cup. But, no, it's like he...
They don't know what to do with it.
He was holding it, and he was skating over, to take the picture, and he fell and, like, dropped it. Like, it didn't fall that far, but it dented the rim around the bottom, which I guess is, I mean, so that's not really, the cup gets dented all the time, but the bottom that he did dent, like the base, does get replaced every year regardless, so it's not like he dented something.
Yeah.
But that was funny. But I liked Nathan McKinnon could, like, not stop talking about Crosby.
Which was heartwarming, beautiful.
Yeah, like,
oh my God.
Was it, he's talking to Emily Kaplan immediately after, and Cogliano skated up to him and was like, 87, 87, and then skated away, and Emily Kaplan's like, what was that about? And Nathan McKinnon, he was like, my hotel room last night was 1787, and he's like, Brian, we knew we were going to win then, because, you know, Crosby, we all love Crosby, Crosby, you know, gave him a little extra luck. I thought that was so
incredible.
Funny. He just wins the cup, and, like, it's, like, the second question. He's talking about how much he loves Sidney Crosby. And then he went on Sportsnet, like, kind of right after, and did an interview with them. And just talking about, like, what it means to win. And he's like, my name's going to be engraved on there along with my idol, 87.
Oh, my God. Incredible.
For, you know, a minute. And, something I thought was really funny, he said that – you know, he would go to Crosby's cup parties, and he was the drunkest guy at Crosby's. So he wants Crosby to be drunk at his.
Which, we'll see. Oh my God. They go hard in Cole Harbour.
I guess so.
My God.
I get
going nuts.
And then McKinnon's dad did an interview with, like, NHL.com after, and he said, you know, he's looking forward to the party. Because he went to the party at, you know, Troy Crosby's house, you know, Crosby's parents' house, and he said, you know, the first person he's inviting is Troy Crosby. So it just runs in the family, but I think that's so funny that McKinnon wins the cup, and it's like, it felt like all the
talking about Crosby.
Sidney Crosby.
Amazing. It's so wholesome, and what a love story for the ages. It's incredible. Oh my God. One other thing league-wide, so they announced the Hall of Fame class for 2022. Taylor, can you give us some insight on who's on that bill?
Yeah, so very Canuck-heavy. Both Sedin brothers and Roberto Luongo, so cool to see all of them go in together. I think people expected at least the Sedin twins. Daniel Alfredson gets in. That's it for the NHL, or the men. On the builder side, it's Herb Carnegie, you know, one of the first black players in the game. So cool to see him get in, very long overdue. And then the women, Riikka Salonen, and she's Finnish, you know, the greatest, you know, Finnish women's players ever. And so this is the first time that a woman outside of North America has been inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Okay.
So that's really cool.
Very cool.
I mean, probably one of the biggest snubs on the men's side is McGillney. I think he's in his ninth year of eligibility. It's not like baseball where it expires. You know, in the MLB, when they vote, it's like if you don't get in within a certain number of years of eligibility, you're just out forever. It's not like that in hockey, at least. So I think McGillney will get in eventually. Rod Brind'Amour, I know people were upset about him. Some people, Sergei Gonchar, I feel like Sergei Gonchar, Rod Brind'Amour, so maybe within the coming years. But, I mean, my biggest issue is on the women's side. So the men, they can do four per year, right? The women, first of all, women have only been getting into the Hockey Hall of Fame since 2010. And they have a limit of two per year, completely arbitrary. But they don't use it. Like, the men typically they use all four of those spots. The women, so what, 12, this is 12 years now that, you know, women have been allowed in the Hockey Hall of Fame. They've only used all two spots in one year, one time, the first year.
Who's voting on this?
Right? Like, there's 18 voters, and you have to get, like, 14 of the 18 to agree to get them in. I believe there are only two women on the panel. I feel like if you can't get 14 of the 18 to agree on some of these picks, then maybe the problem is not with the talent pool. It's with the voters. Like, I don't know, maybe get more women on the panel, or at least people that have experience covering women's hockey. Cause I
think, yeah, couldn't hurt.
One of the biggest outrages, I mean, at least on the women's side, Caroline Ouellette, third in scoring, I believe, all time for Team Canada. She has, like, just four Olympic golds, six World Championship golds. Like, she's one of the greatest, you know, Canadian women's players of all time. Definitely deserving. This was her first year of eligibility. I believe she'll get in at some point here, but...
Yeah.
Still
ridiculous.
Salonen definitely deserving. Like, Riikka Salonen, yeah, she should go in. But use that other spot on Caroline Ouellette, or, like, Jennifer Botterill. I think, you know, people thought she was going to get in, you know, a couple of years ago, that she's been eligible, but it's just, I don't know what the problem is with the voters, I think. If they're not, they can't find two women every year, they're definitely, you know, a couple of deserving women who it's like, how are they not getting in? It's
crazy. Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's so dumb.
The only thing that makes sense to me is, so, you know, Salonen, she wants to get in. Caroline Ouellette, her wife is Julie Chu, who is one of the, you know, greatest American players of all time. This is also her first year of eligibility. I feel like she should get in at some point. The only way this will make sense is if Ouellette and Chu go in together next year. You know? Salonen gets in. I don't know. Maybe they could have also put Jennifer Botterill, but Caroline Ouellette, Julie Chu going together, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a thing in
cool moment
women's hockey. A lot of this is, that's not the only example of like the Canadian and U.S. women like marrying each other after they're done playing. Megan Duggan did it, captain of Team USA. She married a Canadian woman. I think there's a couple others, but I don't know. I just think that's, it's really cool, but yeah, it'd be cool if they go into the Hall of Fame together next year.
Be awesome.
They don't at least use two spots. If Caroline Ouellette, at least her, she doesn't get in, we riot, right?
Yeah. Agree. Let's plan for it now, just in case.
Storm the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah. That sounds like that sounds great to me. Right. Let's book it. Yeah. Let's take one more break. We'll be right back. Back. So just as this NHL season officially concluded, the Penguins are gearing up for their developmental camp July 10th through the 14th, which is less than what? It's like 3 days after the draft. Yeah, it's a handful of days after the draft. So that's something exciting, but it's going to be a bit of a whirlwind. What are we looking at in terms of who we can expect to be there, what we can expect to see, what kinds of stuff we can hope to watch go down for that?
Yeah, so it's going to be in Cranberry. It's all open to the public. If you look on DK Pittsburgh Sports, I mean, I have a story up with, like, the full schedule. It's, I mean, a five-day event. I feel like it's not typically that long. The last day, they do the scrimmage. They play for the Michel Briere Cup, named after the Penguins rookie who died in the 70s. So that'll be cool to see, you know, they take it a little bit seriously, like they want to win.
Yeah.
But as far as like prospects to watch for, right now they're 24 on the roster. They do sometimes add to it. Five interesting ones that I'll be looking for, you know, because they signed a ton of undrafted free agents out of like college, junior, this season alone. Forward Corey Ananovsky out of Princeton, Jordan Frasca out of Kingston in the OHL, Ty Glover out of Western Michigan. Those are the forwards they signed. They signed goalie Taylor Gauthier out of Portland in the WHL, Colin Sawyer. He's the only defenseman they signed in free agency. All of them will be there. So this will be our first look at those five guys in person. That'll be really cool. A couple of AHL contracted players who... they're going to be, they're under contract with Wilkes-Barre, but they're not technically Penguins prospects. A lot of times they can earn NHL deals with like the big club. There are a couple of them. Defenseman Chris Ortiz, who was here last year too. Clay Hannes, who also, he's coming from Portland in the WHL. Sam Hood, who was here last year. And Brooklyn Kamikov, coming from the QMJHL. He's a forward, and then goalie Tommy Napier, who has been in Wilkes-Barre the last 2 years. So couple of guys, you know, fans might not know too well. So the Penguins, they had, you know, the development camp last year. Not all of their 2021 draft picks made it to that. Tristan Brose, their second round pick, didn't make it. Daniel Latch, one of their seventh round picks, did make it last year. Both of them will be there this year. So
exciting.
First look at them. Tristan Brose, he did recently just transfer from Minnesota to Denver in college. Be interesting to talk with him about that. And then, you know, every year they do typically invite undrafted free agents who, sometimes, usually at college, might be looking to leave college early, either this year or next year. So they do have two of those guys coming. Forward Max Sasson, who is 6'1", 181 pounds, left-handed shot, 9 goals, 13 assists in 37 games. He was a freshman last year. And Aiden Fulp, big right-handed shot defenseman. He's 22, 6'3", 210 pounds. 2 goals, 11 assists in 34 games last year. He was a sophomore, both of them coming from Western Michigan. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get contracts because, you know, not a lot of depth in the system. So that's why they can do keep going mm-hmm. with these free agents. So it'll be interesting to see if they get deals. The goalie is attending. So I mentioned Gauthier. Philip Lindbergh, it'll be interesting to see him just because he got hurt in November last year in Wilkes-Barre, his first pro season. That ended the season. It was his ankle injury, Jimmy Ford told me. So he wasn't skating by the time the AHL season ended. So I don't, you know, just because they're coming to camp doesn't mean they're 100% healthy. So hopefully he's back on the ice and we get to see him on the ice. But it's him. And then the other goalie, other than Napier, Gauthier, Lindbergh, it's Joel Blomqvist, who right now probably, arguably, their top goaltending prospect coming from Finland. Was a backup in the top Finnish league last year. He's going to take over as starter next year. He's actually, I did just talk to him in a phone interview. He's doing his mandatory military service over there in Finland. That's something that they have to do. Men in Finland, they have to complete a couple months. I don't know what he's doing it until August. Where they just train to be in the military. He did tell me he was getting leave to come over.
Wow.
And then play in development camp. So, Joel Blomqvist, the reason I talked to Blomqvist, though, outraged because, so the World Juniors, they're playing them this summer. This is the second attempt at doing the World Juniors because if you remember, it was supposed to be in December.
Mm-hmm.
It was not in a bubble. Surprise, surprise, they had positive COVID tests after, you know, all those players flew over from other countries to Edmonton and Red Deer, Alberta, shut down the tournament after a couple of days because they had so many cases. They're doing it again in Edmonton. I guess it's a bubble this time. I think they learned from last time. But so Joel Blomqvist, of like the Finnish, you know, U-20 goalies, he's the best in that age group. And if you look at the season he had in Finland, it unreal. And he was on the roster for the first time they tried doing this tournament. So teams now are starting to announce their camp rosters. You know, so they're going to do the selection process all over again. So it's just training camp rosters, and, you know, they're going to select the rosters from that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even on the camp roster this time. So he's not going to be in the World Juniors. Kind of suspicious.
Why?
Right? That's what I thought. So, like, that's weird. Because if you look at the goalies they're inviting, they're from, like, the Finnish, like, second league. He's clearly better than them. So I talked to him on the phone, and I was like, did you receive an explanation? First of all, he didn't get one. He didn't hear about this until after the rosters already came out. And then the coaches called him after. So he didn't know this was coming. What he was told was, he said, the coaches called me and explained that it was because I, in their eyes, chose the NHL over the national team. So they think he's prioritizing his NHL future over the national team. Now, why do they think this? He said, at least, this is what he believes, and it makes sense, is So when his Finnish team season ended in April, kind of like right after that, he left Finland to come over and play in Wilkes-Barre. He was there for 2 weeks. That's something happens. They come over on tryout contract.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who weren't, you know, you see in juniors, college, Europe, when their season's in there, they'll come to Wilkes-Barre, finish this season, even if they're not going to be there next year. Joel Blomqvist, he's not going to be in Wilkes-Barre next year. He's going to be a starter in Finland. So he did that. He came over 2 weeks, mostly practiced. He played one game. But in that time he was there, Finland, the national team, they played in like a very small European tournament, four teams, in the Czech Republic. So Blomqvist was not available for the tournament because he was in Wilkes-Barre because the Penguins asked him, like, do you want to come over? So he did that. And he missed this tiny four-team tournament.
Wow.
And the coaches are holding it against him and not letting
him play
for the World Junior team. So if they want to lose,
that's so stupid.
Like, right? He's your best goalie. I mean, they have.
Oh my god! What a petty thing to do.
Insane. I felt so bad for him. He sounded like sad on the phone, but insane. Like, okay, if you want to lose, that's fine. I mean, like, they have a strong team otherwise, and there are like capable goalie options, but they're leaving their best one at home. And I just can't fathom that.
Like, that's really stupid.
Poor kid. And I mean, because he's 20, this is his last chance at playing in the World Juniors. So that's that. This is how his career with the Finnish junior team ends.
That's just so dumb.
Right. So the Penguins.
It makes no sense.
You look back to, you know, the first time they tried doing this tournament, we talked about it on the show at the time. They had three prospects in it, which is crazy. They don't even always have one, but they had three in it. Kelly Klang, Joel Blomqvist, and Kirill Tankov. Joel Blomqvist getting snubbed by his Finnish team. Kelly Klang, they traded in the time slots to Anaheim. I mean, he's going to be there, but for Sweden.
Yeah.
But he's not a Penguins prospect. And then Kirill Tankov is Russian, and the Russians are not in the tournament anymore. But Penguins. So if you're a Penguins fan, no reason to watch the World Juniors because
nobody's in it.
No, I mean, Logan Cooley, local kid, going to be drafted this year from Pittsburgh.
Fun.
Watch for him, but
yeah.
No Penguins ties at all, so that stinks.
That does stink.
In other Finnish prospect news, Kasper Bjorkqvist, poor one out. Poor protein shake out. He signed in Finland. Kind of surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a rough... The last two, so this was really his first season in North America. The year before that, they kept him in Finland for the year just because of the effects COVID had on the season. Like, the AHL season was starting late, Finnish season was starting on time. They left him in Finland to get more playing time. The year before that, he tore his ACL after, like, six games in practice. So he missed the full year.
Yeah.
He had an okay, I mean, no, he really didn't have a great season in the AHL, like, production-wise, and he, you know, said after the season that he wasn't really happy with his play in the AHL, but he did finally get called up to Pittsburgh. He played six games. He scored in his debut period. I think if he would have stuck around, he could have probably competed for a bottom six spot.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
There's some spots available. I think Drew O'Connor's going to take one of them, but I don't know, he probably could have competed for a spot, but yeah, signed a 2-year deal in Finland with Karpat, which is Blomqvist's team, so they're going to be together. Good for them.
Okay, yeah, nice.
But yeah, so that's the end of Kasper Bjorkqvist's time in Pittsburgh. I mean, so he was a restricted free agent. They could still extend him a qualifying offer, which would retain his RFA rights, but he is 24 years old. You only keep RFA rights until 27, so it's a 2-year deal in Finland. It would only be for that last year. So if he plays his 2 years in Finland, if he wants to come over to back to North America immediately, they would have his rights. But I don't know. There's no disadvantage to making that qualifying offer, but he's probably
might be for nothing.
He's probably not coming back.
Bummer. Yeah. Liked him a lot. He was
really nice kid.
Yeah, good player too. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I mean,
but what are you gonna do?
A lot of people know, like, He very, very physically strong. You know, Bill Guerin, when Bill Guerin was around, he said the one time that, you know, Casper, he shattered all of their fitness testing records, you know, they do in training camp. Not mm-hmm. just, like, of the prospects of, like,
just in general.
Casper Bjorkvist was, you know, shattering these records. A lot of that is, like, weight stuff. I know he did recently just change his trainers, and it seemed like he is focusing less on the strength stuff. More, like, stuff that would benefit maybe him actually on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. He's not coming back anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
R.I.P. Sucks for us.
Yeah.
Because he was a fun dude. Gonna miss him.
They're losing all their Finns. He left for Finland, Jussi Rikola. He signed in Finland. Niklas Almari, who was a defense prospect who was around the last couple of years, he didn't come up. He signed in Finland.
Everybody's going to Finland.
They're just down to Lindberg and Pustinen. And
jeez.
Casper Bjorkvist, he was one of the ones down there in Wilkes-Barre because, you know, Wilkes-Barre had a ton of Finns. Casper was the one that was forcing Valtteri Pustinen to speak English because he needs to learn. A lot of them would, like, you know, placate Pustinen and speak Finnish with him because that's what he was comfortable doing. But, you know, Casper's like, no, you need to learn English. Say it in English. But so I don't know what this means for Valtteri Pustinen's English. But
hopefully someone else will step in.
Right. His English definitely did get better over the course of the season. But I don't know, going home in Finland for the summer, if that's a, I don't know how much
you can
forget.
Yeah.
Other developmental prospect news. So Scott Young, the director of player development for the past couple of years, he former Penguin too, won the cup with them in the 91. He took a job in Vancouver. So Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford just poaching, you know, Penguins front office. Scott Young, he's their director of player personnel. So what they did was promote Tom Kostopoulos from player development coach to director of player development, which biggest no-brainer move of the summer, I think, because Tom Kostopoulos, you know, he had three different stints as a player in the Penguins organization, and in the last one, you know, his last couple years, he was in Wilkes-Barre, and, you know, I was interviewing him as a player, and it's like, it was almost like he was a development coach back then. I mean, he was still contributing at the AHL level, like, he was a good player at the AHL level his last couple years, but it was like his biggest focuses were just helping the younger guys. And, you know, I remember talking to like Teddy Bluger when Teddy Bluger was, you know, a young guy in Wilkes-Barre, and he was talking about how big, you know, Kostopoulos was for him. And then, you know, Kostopoulos, when he retired, what, four years ago now, immediately got hired as a player development coach. And the players I've talked to down there, they all say the same stuff about Tom Kostopoulos. Everyone loves him down there. So big as a no-brainer. Just really cool to see, like, the progression of his career. He's, like, one of the – I think he's one of four players in history to play at least 600 games at the NHL level and at least 600 at the AHL level.
Oh, wow.
He's been everywhere. He's seen a whole lot.
Oh, my God.
He's a good guy to have as, like, you know, kind of a mentor and working with these young guys. So
very cool. Love that.
Very happy for him. Just the nicest guy, too. And then the other I feel like we're talking about front office moves every week, but the other one was because Andy Socher, their video coach, he got this was last week or was that 2 weeks ago, he got promoted to he's taking on an analyst position. He's gonna be kind of like the go-between between the analytics staff and the coaching GMs, like the front office. So what to replace him, they just took the Penguins assistant video coach Madison Nickel and promoted him to head video coach. And I like, we talk about like Socher's like record with like challenging, you know, goals. Madison Nickel was part of that. It wasn't just Andy working alone. Madison Nickel was part of the team, you know, helping to decide when to challenge.
So that's not going to be lost.
No, and like my understanding is like Andy Socher, his role is still going to allow him to do that during games, maybe not as like that's gonna be his main focus anymore, but he's still involved in that, so nothing that I think fans will notice too much, or that it's gonna be like too much of a step back. over a loss.
Yeah. All positive stuff. That's good.
Positive.
That's good. And then, yeah, one final thing, one positive note. The Penguins were nominated for ESPN's Sports Humanitarian Team of the Year Award, which is pretty awesome. What does that all entail? What requirements need to be met for a team to be nominated for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to... So it's like an ESPN, like it goes along with the ESPYs. The other nominees, it's the Broncos in the NFL, the Miami Heat, the NBA, and the WNBA Seattle Storm. So I don't know, because there's not like an MLB team, so I don't know if they're trying to pick like the top one in each league, and I don't know. Okay. I don't know, but they so they look around and see what kind of like charitable organizations, initiatives, teams that were involved in it. The Penguins, I mean, they are a very worthy nominee. I mean, you just look at like things they did this year. This isn't everything. So I mean, last week alone, the Penguins Foundation, they distributed grants totaling almost $900,000 to different local organizations. Jeez. In the Pittsburgh area, stuff like Children's Home of Pittsburgh, the Ryan Shazier Fund for Spinal Rehabilitation, a very like wide-ranging group of charities.
Yeah.
Several hockey organizations, including Blind Hockey, Special Hockey, Sled Hockey, Warrior Hockey. And then like throughout the year, but in April they had, you know, hockey talks in support of mental health awareness. They had Pride Night and everything surrounding like Pride Night. They, you know, benefited different organizations like Safe Haven, which they aim to provide shelter for LGBTQIA plus youth experiencing homelessness in Pittsburgh. So very worthy cause. They also completed the Willie O'Ree Academy. That's something that was new. They completed the first season of that. That's a group where they created it. It provides unique training, social, and mentorship opportunities for Black youth hockey players across the Pittsburgh area. I know like P.O. Joseph was involved in that, like Trevor Daly for that too. So players, members of the
very cool
the front office, just looking to grow the game of hockey. And I mean, that's just a couple of things that they did this year. So they definitely did a lot of stuff. So that's not a fan voted award. It's not something that fans can vote on. They just decide. So it'll be interesting to see who wins that. I feel I don't know. I can't speak to, you know, their chances or anything, because I don't know too much about what the other teams did.
Yeah.
But very cool to see them be nominated.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's just, it's really exciting to be part of a town with a team like that that's doing so much for the community and the sport, because they're really doing everything that they can to give and to give back and to make the sport itself open and safe for everybody. And that's awesome. Love that they're doing that and that they're being recognized for that, because that's definitely should not go unrewarded in some capacity. So it's good to see them getting some spotlight for that. Really, really cool stuff. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Podcast on Fifth Ave. Just a reminder, we drop new episodes every Thursday, so make sure you're subscribed so you never miss anything. We're on all podcast streaming platforms, and we're on YouTube as well. We'll see you next week for another episode.